Hello, and welcome to Aging Well, Finding Beauty in the Gray. I'm your host, Hugh Willard. Aging Well is a podcast for everyone in or approaching the retirement years. There's a lot to unpack here, apart from the financial planning component, and we'll do just that. We'll explore new interests, priorities, and goals, and finding purpose for ourselves and in our relationships. Join me each episode as I share stories and chat with guests learning to live their best next act lives. Hello again, everyone. Glad you're back with us for another episode with Aging Well, Finding Beauty in the Gray. I'm delighted to have as my guest today, Dr. John Dempsey. Dr. Dempsey is currently the president of Sandhills Community College, but this is going to be soon to be a closing of a chapter for him, and he's going to be writing a new chapter. And so we'll be interested to hear some of what his thoughts are about what comes next for him. To give a bit of background for Dr. Dempsey, he started out at Notre Dame University. He was a political science major as an undergrad there. He went on to get his master's in government at William & Mary in Virginia, and then matriculated north. He went up to UMass, University of Massachusetts at Amherst, and got his PhD in political science there. So that is his gig. That's what he has been doing for the length of his career, along with the administration. He started out with the College of Charleston, where he was a faculty member and a dean there, and then moved on to Belmont Abbey College, just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, before coming around to Sandhills Community College, which is in the beautiful, I don't know that we would call it bucolic. Does it stretch out too much for that? We'll say beautiful land of the pines. Serene, there you go. Serene land of the pines in Pinehurst, North Carolina. Many folks know Pinehurst for the abundance of Lynx courses there. Very beautiful place to be. There's another thing on John's CV, on his resume, that maybe the most interesting thing to me and for me, and we certainly could, if I don't show restraint, we could spend the balance of our conversation on this podcast talking about this. John has an encyclopedic knowledge and recall of baseball trivia. And I know that in the past he has gone to spring training many times, and I know we've had this nasty pandemic that has been interfering with a lot of things. And as we are talking today, there is actually a baseball lockout, so we have yet to see what's going to happen with all that. But that being said, and John helped me with this, it's the Pittsburgh Pirates and what? That was a bad mistake. That was a bad mistake.
Like there. Almost calling you a White Sox fan.
John knows that I am a Cubby. But it's close, Phillies.
Since 1975 that I will not have been at spring training. And it's because there probably won't be any spring training. Last year, even with the
pandemic,
COVID, we drove down and played golf, but we're not even going to make the attempt this year. And it's the first time since 1975, we were in Charleston. I took my son, Michael, to see Mike Schmidt and Pete Rose and all the gang. And I fell in love with the rhythms of spring training, and I've done it my whole life. So I hope to get back to it next year.
I won't say jealous. I will say I am deeply envious, and I will use you as a model and as an excuse for any reason to get down that way, to say I need to follow with John.
Absolutely.
So it's the Phillies, but you, and I won't ask you to do this, but you could name the roster of the 19, what year is that, Phillies?
Let's say 53, if you wanted 53. To talk about the Whiz Kids. I had a gentleman who came in to see me not long ago, and he said, I understand you're from Philadelphia. And I said, yes, that's right. And he said, well, if you're from Philadelphia, then you can give me the lineup of the 1953 Phillies. Now, he didn't know that I was a baseball freak. And I said, sure. Do you want to know the lineup against lefties or righties? And he just about fell out of his chair. I'm not crazy about it. There are people who really are crazy about baseball history and baseball trivia. The only thing I can tell you is that Bernie Carbo just moved to our neighborhood. Bernie Carbo played for the Reds, of course, but he also played for the Red Sox. I was a Red Sox fan. In the American League, I'm a Red Sox fan. And Bernie, very few people remember this. A lot of people remember the Carlton Fisk home run where he's waving. Yes. You know, they do not remember the fact that had Bernie not hit a 3-run, 2-out home run in the bottom of the 8th, Carlton Fisk would not have come to bat in the 9th. So Bernie Carbo, I think, hit what is arguably the most important home run in Red Sox history. And he just moved to our neighborhood. He's coming over to see me on Friday.
Outstanding. And,
we'll have some more baseball talk for sure.
Outstanding. Well, as I said, I need to rein myself in because I would continue this conversation and we would not get on to anything else. But it is important, and I would love to move the conversation over to talk a little bit more about John's experience over the course of his career. He is coming up to the point in the near future where he will retire and move on to the next chapter. So this is a time for us to do some looking back and reflecting on some of the experiences that John has had. I told John off air, I'm interested in absolutely hearing about highlights. I'm interested in hearing about things that stand out for him with respect to his time. And this is for both career and family or personal. And of course you could roll back into some baseball as we started out with this, but so I'm interested in hearing some of those things, and then we'll pivot a bit and we'll look to what the next chapter may be about. So John, tell us a little bit about your thoughts as you look back on your time.
As I'm sure you know, because of the research that you've done, your next chapter is heavily influenced by your current chapter, which is heavily influenced by past chapters. And even though we talked about education, and God knows I love Notre Dame, it's part of my life, loved William and Mary, loved the University of Massachusetts, there are a couple of chapters that we didn't mention that had a tremendous impact on my life and on my career. And just very briefly, the first of those is the Navy. I went to college to Notre Dame. This is pre-Pell. So if you didn't have some money, you didn't go unless you got a scholarship. And I got what they called a Navy ROTC scholarship. And it was something that paid for 4 years of my education, including my books, the whole deal. It was fabulous. But I owed him 4 years when I was done. And the 4 years happened to be 1967 to 71, which, of course, were the Vietnam War years.
Right.
And so you could make the argument that I was not good at picking a four-year period to be in the service. And so I ended up spent a fair amount of time in Vietnam and ended up as the executive officer of an LST, which is a sort of an amphibious ship that goes up and down the rivers. And so I had that experience. Then after I started it, flip forward a decade or so, I started at the College of Charleston. I was very involved in Jimmy Carter's presidential campaign in 1976. When he was fortunate enough to win, I was fortunate enough to be asked to go to Washington to work at the Office of Management and Budget, rather unceremoniously asked to go home after a couple of years because we were losing the election for re-election to Ronald Reagan. But I had a fascinating experience. It taught me two things. One is I had a little bit of a talent for organization and administration. And two is I sure didn't want to be in Washington, D.C., in an office building, even if it was the executive office building, working on memos and the seventh draft of a policy paper for some congressional committee. It just didn't do it for me. So I learned, A, that I could move things around shuffle paper from one side of my desk to the other, had a skill at that. And number two, I wanted to be in college. So that's when I went back, and they made me the dean at the College of Charleston, sort of put me on a track to move forward, forward. The College of Charleston is probably a more prestigious institution than Belmont Abbey. And Belmont Abbey is probably a more prestigious institution than Sand Hills Community College. So I've sort of taken, to use Robert Frost's words, the road less traveled. But it's been great fun. But nearly every day I employ a lesson I learned in the Navy. And it taught me about people. It taught me how to organize, and I hate to use the word manage people, but it taught me how to lead people. So I owe the Navy a great, great, great deal. And I owe the people with Jimmy Carter, who were you know, nice enough to let me work with them for a couple of years and get some administrative experience. So,
well, it goes without saying that. It goes without saying that the rest of us owe you and all service members a great deal of gratitude for all that you contributed and for many sacrificed.
I was talking with a friend this morning, and we were counting. There's one number that you keep in mind, and my number was 3 years, 9 months, 17 days. His number was 3 years, 9 months, and 27 days. The number of days that you were in the service, I often say they were 3 years, 9 months, and 17 of the happiest days of my life. But I counted every single one of those days. They weren't happy at the time, but looking back on them, they were great. And in fact, I'm getting ready this April to go to the fifth or sixth reunion of the seven or eight guys that I was closest to in Vietnam. We get together about every 5 years, and lifelong friends. So yeah, I'm very, very lucky. And I think Hugh, if you were to look at my life and the things that have happened in my life, fortune plays an incredible role. Being in the right place at the right time, being in a situation where when I went to Washington with President Carter, I actually first got assigned to the Justice Department, to the Bureau of Prisons. Now, that's a great place to work. You know, you go to Washington with a new administration, people say, where do you work? And I said, well, the Bureau of Prisons. Oh, my God. And that was reasonably interesting. But I was actually somewhat underutilized, and I would spend a lot of time just kind of hanging out. And we got this opportunity to send one person to the White House. And the boss said, well, you're not doing anything. Why don't you go over there? So in an instant, I went from the least interesting job in Washington to one of the most. Yeah, and that was just luck. I just happened to be doing nothing at the time. So I came here to Sand Hills because a dear friend of mine, Robert Barrett, who owned the Pinecrest Inn, I used to come here vacationing, and I just always loved Pinehurst. He called me one Christmas and he said, the president of the local college is retiring. You love it down here so much. Why don't you come down? And I said, there's no college in Pinehurst. What are you talking about? And he said, well, there's a community college. And I said, well, excuse me, but I'm not going to work at a community. He said, come on down and see it. And it don't look like no community college.
It's gorgeous.
It looks like UCLA. I like to say we have UCLA ambience at Sand Hills Prices. So that was a fortunate phone call that he made on that Christmas week of, 19. I've been here 33 years. This is my 34th year, I think. So I can't, I was not a mathematician, so I can't even subtract 34 from 2022. I have no idea what you'd get. I come up with 1856 or something like that. I know I haven't been here that long, but you got to be in the right place at the right time. And I have been. And I think that this is probably the right time to think about retirement. I I'll be 77 my next birthday. Could be, I might be 76, might be 75, but it's in the mid to upper 70s. And you do lose. I fortunately have not, I don't think, have lost any mental acuity, but you do lose energy and you do lose enthusiasm. And that is something I'm sure you're talking about with your clients and your readers and your listeners. And that is how to maintain energy and how to maintain creativity and enthusiasm in your senior years. And I by senior years, I don't mean that I flunked 12th grade. I mean the years that you spend as a senior.
Very true.
You know, I think in some ways I've answered part of your question by working in my retirement years. Most people retire when they are, you know, 62 or 65, sure, maybe 67 if they love what they're doing. Well, I've done it for 10 years more than that. So I've spent 10 years that, you know, many people might spend in a second job, or many people might spend writing a book, or many people might spend, you know, traveling in an RV from Tampa to
Seattle.
Seattle. So I've been working during those years. Now, fortunately, my board, as I'm sure you know, is very, very kind to me, and they give me a lot of time off. So I've been able to take the RV from Tampa to Seattle while continuing to work, which is a great deal. But so I've done a lot of things that have been creative, but I've done them while still in the context of work. And I don't fear the loss of creativity. And I don't even fear the loss of energy, but I do fear a bit the loss of enthusiasm. I was having lunch yesterday with a guy who's 71, and he's just retired. And we were talking with the superintendent of schools here, who just retired. I believe he's 65. And so it was interesting to see the perspectives of a new retiree, 65, a sort of mid-retiree, 71, and a guy who's probably too old to even be talking about retirement at the age of 77. But the one thing that the 71-year-old and I agreed on that the 65-year-old couldn't quite get was, and the fellow who's 71 said, "I've lost a little bit of my adventurousness."
Interesting.
And I thought to myself, that's it. That's what I'm lacking. I need some adventures. We've had some great adventures. Many of them have been associated with travel. Evelyn and I took a trip around the world in 1998. And we took a trip to virtually every national park you ever heard of in about 2008. I can't remember what the year was. So we've done those kinds of things. We've been very enthusiastic about them. We do the planning, and I've told many people planning isn't half the fun. It's 3/4 of the fun. I love planning out trips, even if COVID comes and we never go. It's the planning, the juices flowing about something that is in the future. And that's the thing I worry a bit about, losing that. I haven't lost it yet. You know, we've got my wife and I have a 54th, I think it's 54th, anniversary coming up. And so I'm trying to figure out if we go to the, what's that place? The Greenbrier, the other one, the Homestead. If we go to the Homestead, will I play golf or will I try fly fishing? I tried fly fishing once before and it didn't work out like it did for Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt and Tom Skerritt. And
right. Yeah, it wasn't the same, you know. I mean, I was catching my hooks on the back of my ears and things of that nature, falling down on the slippery rocks, getting water inside my waders, and you know, all of a sudden my legs, which already weigh 100 pounds, were weighing 200 pounds. So maybe I'll stick to the golf, you know, thinking about what we're going to do. I love doing that stuff. And I don't think, I hope I never lose that. and planning. The fellow who's 71 said he's going to Scotland next year and he needs my help telling him where to go. And I said, well, you know, you're really talking to a person who in some ways wants to become a travel agent when he grows up, because that's, I'd love to do that. I'd love to help people think about trips. Before we started, I was trying to tell you about the lake that's between Banff
and Scholar,
right. By the way, the most beautiful national park that I've been to is in fact not in the United States, but it is the Canadian Rockies. I've never seen anything in America that's as impressive as except maybe the inverted Canadian Rockies, the Grand Canyon. Grand Canyon is about as deep as the Canadian Rockies are tall. So you put those two together and you have Kansas, but the way they're separated is very interesting. So I really hope that that will stay with me, that enthusiasm. It's always been, I've written a lot and spoken a lot on leadership, and I've always finished whatever talk I was giving. My thoughts have changed over the years, but I've always finished with enthusiasm and you know, and being a cheerleader. And if you're not enthusiastic, give the reins to somebody who is, because that's the one thing you can't manufacture. And if you don't have it, you don't have it. I still have it and I hope to keep it. I don't know whether I should be talking to you or I should be asking you questions. I mean, you've done the research. How do you keep it?
Well, it's, there's some individual character to it, but to give a broad answer, it does require an accounting. It does require looking inside of oneself, taking stock for this time of life, also allowing for context and moving into the abstract idea of an experience. And we can plan for these things in the abstract with some material considerations. We certainly can get feedback. We can get perspective. We can look at the research, read people's accounts. So we can prepare to an extent, but then we step over the threshold. We step through the door into the new experience, and we need to be awake. We need to be aware. We need to be tuned into, how do I feel now that I'm here? What are my fears associated with this new place? Because the way our brains work, our brains are going to bump up a little bit more out of autopilot, where we spend most of our time.
Yeah.
And that acuity, that tuning into this new experience, it will feel a bit like anxiety at some level. Again, we don't have to make this a pathology experience, but
I'm a little afraid of retirement.
Yeah.
That's
natural.
In my case, it's there's a certain, God, this is going to sound awful, but there's a certain majesty that goes with my position, where people kowtow to you, where they bow your head, their heads where you always get a good seat in a taxi cab or a place at the table. And I'm not going to have that. And so my wife thinks it's really going to really bother me. And I don't know if it will or not.
It is to be paid attention to. How am I feeling in this time, experience? Yeah,
absolutely. And our situation is interesting. It's exacerbated by the fact that I live in a college house where all my needs are taken care of. When I had COVID, I was pretty sick. I was in the hospital for 3 days, and then after, you need about a week for every day you spend in the hospital. So I was kind of out of it for a couple of weeks. But kind of got to the point where I enjoyed sharing my morning coffee with my wife. Now there are changes that occur even beyond that, though, because my brother has just lost his wife. And he is really, really, really in a difficult situation. They had no children. Married 50 years this August. And so he's getting two or three chapters at once. All of a sudden it's you're trying to read your book and it's James Joyce you're trying to read. and you can't quite understand it because things are coming at you too fast. You know, the old Mike Tyson line about, hey, everybody's got a plan until somebody punches you in the mouth. Right. You know, life can punch you in the mouth, and it eventually punches everybody in the mouth. But to be thinking about the ways to view a retirement as a net gain rather than a net loss, I think is the challenge. I know I will feel as though I have lost some things when I leave here.
You will have lost some things. So
I will have lost colleagues. I will have lost friends, but I will have gained so much as well. I will have gained the ability to go out and watch two Notre Dame games back to back and stay in South Bend for a week. Not that South Bend is a garden spot, but I'll probably go to Chicago actually. But I wouldn't do that while I'm working, and I wouldn't go off. We've got a trip to New York coming up in the fall, and I'm already thinking I need to go either a week before that or a week after that and go to Vermont, see the, you know, see the trees.
The leaves. Right.
Yeah, the leaves. Right. So, you know, it's going to have many benefits, and I'm going to try to make my life centered around those benefits. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to, you know, doing things at a little bit slower pace. I love to read, and you know, most of my reading gets done in the late hours of the day, and so I'm good for maybe four chapters, and I'm asleep. I like to do a little reading in the middle of the afternoon, sitting by the side of the lake. We're going to be moving to a house that's by Spring Valley Lake here in Whispering Pines, and that's something that we're very much looking forward to. So, you want to focus on the positives, and you want to focus as much as you can. Was it Satchel Paige who said, "Don't look back; somebody might be gaining on you." You try not to look back, whether you're talking about stages of life or retirement. I have found that this, is it Gail Sheehy? Is that the woman?
Gail Sheehy, yes. Passages, right.
Passages. I have found I'm very interested in mentoring my younger colleagues as I've gotten older. I'd say the last 5-6 years, I have spent trying to figure out if there are any people here who would eventually like to do this job or a job like it, and trying to put them in situations to prepare them for that. So I've enjoyed the mentoring stage that Dr. Sheehy talks about, and it's been fun, and I will miss that. Though, you know, you're always a kind of a confidant and a shoulder to cry on to people for whom you've been a mentor, and I'll expect that will continue, but I'll miss active mentoring. I'm a teacher. I teach in addition to being a bureaucrat here. I teach, and I'll miss teaching.
There are two questions that I like to pose to people who are moving into the retirement years. And these questions are meant to be active, dynamic, sit with, return to questions. And that is, what matters to me and what interests me?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, those are pliable questions. They're not meant to be set in stone. They're meant to help us continue to orient.
My laughter matters to me. That's going to sound silly, but I used to say, if you don't have at least one good belly laugh a day, you're in the wrong business. And you're leading the wrong kind of life. My wife and I, we laugh all the time. That's all we do, it seems. And we laugh at each other. We laugh at ourselves. We laugh at how old we've become. We laugh at fate. The only thing we don't laugh about is politics. And I'm trying, it's a terrible thing for political scientists to say, but I'm trying to insulate myself as much as I can. I love to play golf, and golf matters to me. And so I hope I don't lose the ability to do that. I love shooting the breeze to no apparent value. So that matters to me. I love to read. I love to take, you know, you can only live one life, but gosh, if you read, you can lead a thousand lives. You know,
you can have adventures, endless adventures.
Oh, endless adventures. I mean, it's right. Just those things are extremely important to me.
Sure. And it is perspective. It is perspective. It's how you view the,
yeah,
the experience.
Yeah, so, yeah. Everybody is dealt the same onion, and it's all how you slice it, you know. And I will walk across the campus, and I will say to a student, "Isn't it a beautiful day?" And the student will say, "I think it's too hot." And I will say to myself, "That kid is missing the point. He's missing the point, or it's too cold. No, you're missing the point. It's a beautiful day. It's a day to rejoice in nature. It's a day to rejoice in your friends. It's a day to rejoice in your job." So I would say laughter, enthusiasm, and certainly gratitude matters to me.
Dr. John Dempsey, I think that is a wonderful point for us to bring our conversation to, I will say, a pause, not a close, but a pause for this time. I really appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your busy schedule and talking with us. And I am sure that many folks will appreciate and benefit from some of your thoughts. And so once again, thank you for joining us on Aging Well, Finding Beauty in the Gray. And we wish you all the best as you go forward into the next chapter.
Thank you very much. We'll chat soon about gratitude.
Wonderful.
You have been listening to Aging Well, Finding Beauty in the Gray. I am author, psychotherapist, and life coach Hugh Willard. To learn more about this podcast, listen to other episodes, and discover resources related to our guests and topics, please go to our website, findingbeautyinthegray.com. If you have comments or questions, or would be interested in sharing your story with us, we'd love to hear from you. Please reach out to us at findingbeautyinthegray.com. Aging Well is produced by Willow Way Creations, with sound engineering by Garrison Locke. Theme music is written and performed by yours truly, with Greg McGee and Garrison Locke. Thanks everyone for joining us. We hope you will be with us again next week.